Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very, very happy Sunday, February 26th, 2023 to everybody. This is Chase coming to you from Arizona, and joining us, I think, from Texas is Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
I am in Texas, Chase. I'm doing great. Just wrapped up this Penn State-Rutgers game with Rutgers coming back from 20 down in a must-win game for Penn State. So I think that game kind of sums up the weekend pretty well.
It has been an absolutely crazy weekend. Crazy shots, buzzer beaters galore. One of the most fun college basketball weekends in memory, recent memory at least. Just a lot of fun. Largely overshadowing to the extent it can, the kind of the uglier news out of Alabama. So I'm happy we had this fun weekend. And from the SC perspective, it was a great weekend. This is actually the third time, I didn't realize it was the third time we've swept the Mountain Schools during the Andy Enfield era. We did it first time during J-Mac's senior season, 2017-2018. Chemezi's last year at SC. Now that was, Benny had been hurt at that point in the season, and we lost D'Anthony Melton because of the whole FBI scandal. So that was still a very strong team, and we were able to win both games by double digits also in the Mountain. And then we came back last season after getting swept two times since then, came back, swept there last year, and then sweep again, double digit victories both games, which is huge. Apparently now the stat is being floated out there that with the four consecutive double-digit victories SC has had in conference play these last four games, it's the largest margin over a four-game period in for conference play in USC history. I did not realize that.
Yeah, they're on a roll for sure. As down as I think everybody was after the Oregon State game, it definitely seems to have lit a fire under the team. And I think getting healthy is just a big part of this too. I mean, you look at the way Reese has looked since coming back from injury, and he seems to have a lot of, have his confidence back. He looks good physically. I know just seeing him in person for that Stanford game, he looked a lot better physically in that, I felt like, than he did on TV. And then, he played well this week as well. So I think that's great. Josh Morgan contributed with, typical rim protection, made things really tough in that Utah game especially. And I think the narrative of like Andy struggling against Tad Boyle, right? Like that's three straight now. It's to me, it looks like it's more of a sample size thing than anything, right? Like, even though there was a trend there, you do realize you're playing these teams one to maybe three times a year. And, it's really easy to drop a few and have like a drought over the course of a few years, and I think it makes things look worse than it actually is. So always great to win in Boulder, right?
Absolutely. I do think there is a little bit here on that front. This Utah after losing Kristowiak obviously lost, I think has suffered a personnel degradation. And, it's just been tougher with Colorado the last couple of years. They just haven't, after that last season with McKinley Wright, they just haven't had the horses that they had up to then. I know Tad Boyle was wanted to start the rebuild quickly, started last season. And I think some of the guys he's wanted to use for that rebuild have not quite worked out the way that he was hoping. Tristan Silva's played well. Of course, he suffered an ankle injury tonight against UCLA, so I think he might be done for the season. KJ Simpson, I think, has had for the most part, a really strong sophomore year. But a lot of the other guys that he was counting on have not really risen to the level of the prior personnel group, that package of players he had. So yeah, the roster has not been as strong for Colorado, and that's, I think that's shown. And I would say in both, look, the Colorado game on Thursday when we played them, I mean, it was not a particularly close game in any meaningful way. We pretty much dominated the game. In the Utah game, I'd almost call that like SC just playing against themselves. I think it's like, as long as we played our game and did our thing and didn't make mistakes, we're just going to win that game. And there was the only thing that was kind of holding us back for a while in that game was just the rebounding problem. And that finally got straightened out, and we were able to kind of pull away in the last several minutes and win the game comfortably by 13 points.
Yeah. The thing that really stood out was the team rebounds. So, KenPom keeps the stat. So basically, a team offensive rebound is when no individual player secures the offensive rebounds, but the defensive team like taps it out of bounds. So it's effectively an offensive rebound, even though no player gets it. So Utah had 8 team offensive rebounds in that game. I think that's the highest any team's gotten against us this year. So that really stood out. I thought we were losing a bunch of 50-50 balls in that first half. Which is why we were shooting well, and it felt like we should have been up more than 6, but they just kept hanging around. And I think especially in that last 10 minutes, I don't know if it was an effort thing. I'm not sure if it was Utah just running out of gas or whatnot, but we really closed that game out, I think, on the defensive glass over the last 5 to 7 minutes, where we really struggled on that run the first half.
You know, and I don't want to get at all be negative about a 13-point victory, you know, in Salt Lake City. But I do have to say there's a little bit of what I noticed to me is we settle into leads of about 6 points and the team feels very comfortable. I could just – the way – it seems like Drew feels very comfortable about the lead. I think to an extent Kobe feels very comfortable about the lead, just maintaining the 6-point lead. And then if the other team like cuts into it, gets it down to 2, okay, time to go hit a shot. Time to go, you know, I think they got it down to 2 and, you know, Kobe went and hit a 3. And that's, I don't like that playing that style, that kind of like, you know, we're just doing enough to maintain this 6-point lead. And then, and I think the thinking was, okay, then we'll just close the game out and win at the end. I think that's fine. I'd rather get ahead of it, and like we did against Colorado more, and just like close out the game earlier. But you did see that there was kind of like a little bit of a lackadaisical attitude. As we're starting the second half in that game, we're basically up to like, you know, like 75% chance to win. And then we've dropped right back down to like 55%. We're, you know, bouncing up between 55 and 75% chance to win until about 10 minutes to go. And that's where we kind of put in a higher effort level or whatever it is that caused us to kind of pull in and win. I think Utah didn't score, didn't hit a field goal for the last 5.5 minutes. I know they only scored 6 points in the last 10 minutes of the game. It's not like we went on a scoring tear. We scored 14 points during that period. But you could definitely feel that, like, this was a game, I think, that our players were kind of controlling the pace and just like, okay, we're gonna play the level and then we're going to turn it on. We're going to hit the gas, pump the gas when we need to.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I don't think that that quality is unique to this team. I mean, look at Arizona, right? Yeah, I mean, they played the same way against Arizona State. And, you know, lo and behold, with 2 minutes left, you're in a fight and the Sun Devils are right there, right? And they end up pulling the game out on the crazy half-court shot. I think all teams go through it. We didn't really have that issue against Colorado. I thought the effort level there was just consistent the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, you had like a few minor things, like it was pretty clear. And I think Andy talked about it in the, you know, to the media afterwards, just saying Vince didn't have the cardio with the altitude up there. So he didn't play significantly. And you saw Kajani get some run, I think, because of that. So like, but that's not, you know, I don't think it was a low effort thing, you know, just with the heart condition and the altitude, like that was just a factor in that one. But yeah, like over, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say overall, like other than that, I thought our conditioning was really strong. I mean, we you know, despite the altitude in Salt Lake and in Boulder, you know, we really closed those games out well.
Yeah. Yes, we did. Funny, Kajani, you know, he played 14 possessions of offense and 12 possessions of defense over the 12 games. But man, I mean, we just dominated those like 26 two-way possessions, outscoring basically by more than a half a point per possession there. So I mean, I think over that we outscored the opponent in those 14 points in those 26 back and forth possessions. So he was effective when he was in there for whatever he was doing. The rebounding issue, I think, is, you know, it's still there. Vince has struggled a little bit still with the rebounding. And you see that when he's coming in, the big difference between he and his minutes and Joshua's minutes, and they're, you know, somewhat comparable overall, but Joshua was just much better. We were much better on defense when Morgan was in the game, and we were much better on offense when Vince was in the game. So, but otherwise, you know, I think it's a yeoman's effort, and we got the contributions we needed to get. I know Trey has his shooting has been off, and still it's not like 100% back on yet or anything close to that. But you know, his on-court, off-court splits were really strong. So it's like we do play a lot better when he's on the court. And that's worth noting. This all sets us up for, you know, because of that, one of the crazy, the first of the first of them, but the crazy last second long shots to, you know, Hail Mary shots, buzzer beaters, Arizona State hitting a longer than half court shot to beat Arizona. As a result of that, we're now tied with Arizona heading into the final weekend of the season, the final set of games. And the top four teams in the conference are UCLA, Arizona, USC, and Arizona State. So I do not think that this has ever happened before, where the last week in the season, the LA schools are going to be hosting the top four in the conference. If it's ever happened, I'd be shocked. But and I'm not even sure who it would have been, maybe Cal and Stanford. But anyway, those are the top four in the standings. And at this point, I think as a result of Arizona State beating Arizona, the only four serious contenders, I'd say right now, to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I know we talked about previously, like, oh, ASU has the opportunity in front of them with these last three if they sweep to get into the tournament. And, you know, they went one for one. Kind of looking back over some of these resumes, though, and I don't know what you think about this, but I think if ASU splits in LA, they should get in. I mean, just
Oh,
when you look at.
I think they will get in if they split in LA. And in as of this morning's bracket matrix, they were the first team out in terms of the mo being in the most brackets, but just missing being in the field. So I don't know where they are officially, like on the Lenardi's list or Palm's list, but I'm assuming they've got to be either first four out or next four out, right? And
I think Lenardi bumped them to first four out. I haven't seen Palm update a bracket yet, but presumably, like he's better at it than Lenardi, I think. So I think he'll have them, you know, last four in, first four out, if I had to guess.
So I guess, I mean, should we talk? I mean, before we talk about just the whole, you know, the bracket stuff, maybe we should talk a little bit about UCLA, Colorado. And it is interesting that, you know, I've talked in previous podcasts how, you know, maybe one of the differences between Mick Cronin and Andy Enfield is Mick Cronin will just grind his players into wins. And he kind of did that on the mountain trip. They did win both games, but it was a grind. Both of them, including the Utah game, they just, you know, it was a grind and they won the game. And credit to them, and they locked up the regular season conference championship. And credit to Nick for picking UCLA to win the Pac-12 when I disgracefully picked Arizona. So props to you, Nick. You win it. But 7-point win against Utah, 4-point win against Colorado. It was a little bit ugly. I mean, they look a win when you're, it's a win when you're in the mountain area. A win's a win. But these teams are not particularly tough, and UCLA is legitimately in contention to be like a number one overall seed. Now, I think that might be just going to Houston or maybe to Alabama, but UCLA is in contention for that. And they weren't like super impressive in those games. Do you have any thought about what you saw from UCLA this weekend?
I agree with you that they grinded it out, and I didn't think they had kind of their best stuff, and they still managed to pick up 2 quad 1 road wins. So I think like, I do think they weren't super impressive, but at the same time, they certainly helped themselves. And I think that the number one takeaway I had from those two games is really, 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 I guess two things is A, like Jaime Jaquez is really good at basketball and yeah. B, they're just so reliant on him, right? Like without him, I think they lose both those. He's been awesome over the last 5 here. Scoring wise, he's at 25, 26, 20, 23, and 17. So north of 20 points per game over his last 5. And they've needed him in several of these games, you know, Oregon Road, Utah Road, Colorado Road, 3 quad 1 wins, and he's risen to the occasion. So I certainly think he's Pac-12 player of the year at this point. Tommy Lloyd wouldn't even play as Azulis Tubelis at the end of the ASU game because his defense was so bad. Thought that was pretty interesting. And then when you look at Jaquez in the KenPom National Player of the Year race, he's up to number 3, yeah. Just behind Zach Edey and Trace Jackson Davis. So UCLA is legit, and I think he's a huge part of that. And they're going to sorely miss him, I think, next year, where you could see like a big downgrade in their offense heading into next season.
Yeah, and at some point we're going to have to talk about the Pac-12 next season because we've already started talking about it. And then I'd mentioned, you know, Colorado had an opportunity to be very, very strong. Although I have to say, man, watching them these two games, I don't know. I mean, I know they're getting Cody Williams next year, but it seems I feel like they need like they're just too frail, you know, like they're not big and tough like some of the other Tad Boyle teams and athletic. I feel like they need like all new players other than like KJ Simpson and Tristan De Silva. And do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, I know this is kind of a little bit of a one-off here, but
yeah, no, I felt the same way. I do like Luke O'Brien as well. He's 6'8", 213, so he's got the size. He's number 3 defensive rebounder in the league in conference play. Blocks and shots, he's shooting 38% from 3 in conference play. So I think he's been pretty underutilized by Boyle, but he's moved in the starting lineup recently, and he's consistently getting 27 to 36 minutes a game now over the last 5. So I think Boyle's kind of figured that out, but they definitely could have used, I think, more of him in like the Grambling game or the UMass game. He played 9 minutes against UMass and 14 minutes against Grambling, but now he's a nice player. I think their guards outside of Simpson are pretty terrible, like non high major guys. And Cody Williams, I mean, he's got a ton of potential, but he's very raw, I guess, for like a top 5 NBA draft pick. So you're kind of like, it's more of an upside play.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, right? I think it's silly, but I mean, I guess that's what they're going with.
Yeah. So you kind of have this core. I mean, I guess you hope that Lawson Lovering puts on another 20 pounds, and he's not terrible. Like, I wouldn't mind him as a reserve big. I'm not sure he's ready to be like a starter on a really high quality team. And then KJ, I mean, without the consistent 3-point shooting, and some of that might be just, you know, the teammates are non-threats, so he gets just guarded so heavily. But, you know, I don't think he's certainly not at Boogie Ellis's level as an offensive player.
Oh, nowhere near. I mean, but he's very crafty inside, you know, inside, like within the 10-foot range of the basket. But yeah, he doesn't, it really hurts not having guys to kick it out to. Now, in fairness, Javon Ruffin didn't play these last 2 games, and he's been pretty efficient. Although Tad Boyle is only playing him like 30% of minutes, I guess, you know, for whatever reason. So, and I don't know if he's injury prone or what the issue has been with him, because I know he's missed, this is like the second stretch of games he's missed this season. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with him. And, you know, he's one of the bright spots, I think, on what they've got going, but he just hasn't been used a ton.
Then you have Ethan Wright and Julian Hammonds, who are kind of manning that that two spot down right now. Both are 6'3", so undersized for that spot. They played a combined against UCLA 41 minutes, scored 3 points, had 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, and no steals. So you're just getting just absolutely nothing out of that spot.
And, you know, Quincy Allen, who I know they've were a lot of high hopes about him, and he played, you know, decently against us, only played 5 minutes against UCLA for whatever reason. So, just kind of – anyway, I do think – I'm not sold on the idea that they're going to be necessarily that great next season, but it's kind of a digression. Okay, so let's talk about
this. I want to talk about one more thing too, Chase.
Sure.
Before we move on to it. So just going back to that Arizona-ASU game, and we talked a little bit about this offline, but what do you think of Tommy Lloyd's decision to start walk-ons?
So, well, look, I mean, so I could tell you if I was an Arizona fan, I would be pulling my hair out and just like beyond belief upset. 100% sure of that. 100% sure of that. By the same token, if you look at like the time splits on the games, I mean, by 16 minute mark of the game, the walk-ons were out of the game. And yeah, okay, Arizona was down or whatever by 4 points, but that's not the reason they lost the game. I mean, they gave up over the last 30 minutes of the game, they gave up some like 67 points to Arizona State. That's why they lost. It's not because of those walk-ons being in the game at the very beginning of the game. So yeah, I mean, I would have been super, I would have been upset for sure. But like, I don't think you can blame the loss on that. I mean, like, you have to blame the loss on giving up all these the points going forward to Arizona State.
I think both things are true. Like, it's not the only reason they lost, but if you lose a game by 1 point and you start your walk-ons, they play several minutes and you lose that stretch by more than 1 point, I think it's really easy to turn to and look back at that. And I mean, this was an important game for them, right? Like, they, this could be the difference between a 2 and a 3 seed.
Yeah. And there's one more point here that you really have to appreciate, which is part of the reason Arizona is so good at McHale is it's a very intimidating environment. And that's something that really like shocks the other team and can really shock them as the game starts and like they never recover. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is very, really, really intimidating. And then you replace that intimidating feeling with like, you basically get to play 5-on-3 for the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game. You get to settle into the game a little bit and you're not going to be as intimidated. So I think that's probably a big factor, quite frankly.
I do too. A few other notes on that game. There's been several points of criticism from Arizona fans on Lloyd's coaching in the last few seconds. Kind of two main points, I guess. One is that why didn't they like defend Devin Cambridge more on the shot? And the second one is why didn't he tell Ballo to miss the free throw? Because ASU was out of timeouts. There was under 3 seconds left, and they would have had to scramble just to, you know, get a shot up. I think that I'm fine with the way they defended Cambridge. You don't want to foul under any circumstance there and have any risk of sending him to line for three. So I don't really mind that. I know like Larson was backpedaling a little bit, but you know, the one that I do think is legit is Ballo should have missed that free throw.
100%.
I've never seen a situation like that where you miss it and they, you know, the other team rebounds it, gets together and makes the three. Just never seen it in my life.
Nope. Absolutely. Absolutely should have missed it. No question. No question about it. And, you know, look, they make the three either scenario, they're going to lose. Right. So there's no point. And that extra point doesn't help you at all. 100%. 100%. Right. Okay. So let's talk about like what's going on here. So you pointed this out to me. I could not believe this. Like, so now after we beat Utah yesterday, we were at 33 in KenPom. We've since moved up again, moved back down. So we've kind of settled in now at number 32. And I say settled in, I mean, we're, there's like very almost no difference between the number 36 team in KenPom and the number 29 team. I mean, 29 and 36 is like any number of games that those teams don't even play in could cause reordering of those teams. Okay. But what's interesting is you asked me how many teams in the ACC are ranked ahead of USC. And I just naturally, in KenPom, yeah. And I just naturally assumed, oh, it must be at least Virginia, right? Maybe Duke. And no, Virginia's 38, Duke is 34. Miami, which lost yesterday, fell. They're at 37. Now, like, so these are the top three teams at KenPom in the ACC. Those teams, according to the latest like bracketologies we've seen, Virginia was still like in the top four as of the start of the day yesterday. I'm not sure where they are now. Miami was Miami right in the top four, or was it just outside the top four?
They were, I think, on the four line.
Yeah. So if you go by today's bracket matrix, Virginia's still on the four line. Miami's on the five line. Duke is on the seven line. North Carolina State, which is, where are they in KenPom at this point? Okay. They're on the eight line. Pittsburgh's on the 10 line. All of those teams are ahead of USC. All of them. Five different ACC teams, which are ranked below USC and KenPom. Now, this, you would think maybe this could be explainable if you go to overall record. And SC, you know, the record is shielding things. It's hard to make that argument because the best record amongst these guys is are Virginia and Miami. They have six losses. Virginia actually has the same number of wins as USC, 21. Duke has the same record as USC. Strength of schedule for those schools are not as strong. So that's a little bit tricky to make. Then Sagarin came out this morning. USC is up to number 23 at Sagarin. So it is pretty remarkable. I think we're right now number 35 in Torvik. So these are like, and then Haslam metrics, which is probably the fourth best or among the best. Has this, I think, at number 26, maybe 24. Let me confirm that in a second. But these are like the gold standards of rating performances of college basketball teams. And in virtually every case, not everyone, but virtually every case, USC is better than the best team from the ACC. And still, we're like on so much on the bubble that we're like still in the playing game. Maybe we're now in from the playing game, maybe not. But it is pretty frustrating to me that we're seeing what I would say is some sort of major flaw in the selection process that is being kind of imposed upon USC here and potentially UCLA as well.
It's a total scam. I think just looking at it now, you mentioned Pittsburgh, and it's really funny, right? Because the national like narrative around Pitt is that they're like a lock, right? Like no one's even talking about them being on the bubble. If you compare their resume with ASU, which I would say is out in the majority of brackets, both teams are 4-3 in quadrant one. Both teams are 4-0 in quadrant three. Both teams have one quadrant four loss. And ASU is 5-5 in quad two, and Pitt is 3-4. So the only differences between the resumes is ASU's played, if you just look at the quadrants, and I don't think that's the best way to do it, but that's what a lot of the selection process is these days. ASU's played an extra three quadrant two games, and they've gone 2-1 in those. So you think, like, on paper, like, these are really similar resumes. And even if you dig a little deeper into ASU's, right, one of those quadrant one wins is a win at Arizona, just a complete monster win, right? In KenPom, these teams are very similarly situated. It's at 55, ASU's at 61. But you're looking at a several seed line difference in where these teams are seeded. You know, I think USC's case, it's even more egregious. I mean, you know, USC right now is 10-6 in the first two quadrants, and nine of those 16 games are in quadrant one. They played more quadrant one than quadrant two games. And meanwhile, Duke, which is comfortably in the tournament, according to the, you know, bracket people, they're 8-8 in the first two quadrants. So you have 10-6 versus 8-8. Now, USC does have the quad three and the quad four loss. That's true. But again, like, Duke is several seed lines ahead of USC. It's not even close, right? Like, they're looking at like a 6 or 7 seed in these bracket projections. Meanwhile, like, people are still talking about North Carolina potentially getting in the tournament. They've lost 11 games, and their only quadrant one win is against Virginia, which is 28 in the net. They beat Virginia at home over the weekends. And, you know, if the net were KenPom, you know, Virginia would be sitting at 38, and that'd be a quadrant two win. So this is even with the net having a massive ACC bias. So, for instance, right, Duke in the net's 25. Duke in KenPom is 34. USC in KenPom is 32, and USC in the net is still down at 45. So for whatever reason, even with all the flaws in this net algorithm, which clearly, and you can pick out several examples of this. I mean, Pitt's 52 in the net. They're at 55 in KenPom. You've got, you know, UCLA coming into today was 4 in the net. They're 2 in KenPom. Colorado is another one. They're 75 in the net. So that game, because we beat them by so much, it's on the verge of being a quad two road game. And then when we beat them the first time, that would drop to quad three if they dropped out of the top 75. So they're at 75 in the net, just barely, you know, within that quad one for the road. And they're, you know, they're 56 in KenPom. So there's a 19 spot difference there. Washington State, they're 57 in KenPom, and they're down at 74 in the net. So, you know, another 17 spot difference there. So you go over, you know, over and over again, you see just a massive, like, anti Pac-12 pro ACC bias in these rankings. And it's absolutely mind blowing that it seems like, you know, if we drop a few more games, we could be sent to Dayton for the play-in round. I don't know what to say, but it's consistent. It's not even among, like, one bracketologist. And, you know, I do definitely think you have a lot of groupthink in the whole industry, where everybody's copying, like, Palmer Lenardi with all that. So it's hard to, like, really know where we actually are. But I just continue to be mind blown by all these forecast and have us as, like, an 11 seed right now. I think it's completely absurd.
And you know, I do not understand the point of calling out these quad one, quad two records separate from the net, because they're supposed to be baked into the net. It's like, so you're looking at the net and you're looking at these call outs from a baked in. How about looking at the quad three and quad four? I mean, but even if you want to look at, like, quad one, quad two, and here's an interesting way to look at this. So rather than just looking at, like, okay, what's your record within quad one? Because not every quad one and quad two game is equal, right? So,
right.
You know, it's probably helpful to have a general idea of like how you actually performed in those games. And Bart Torvik has a great tool on his website that lets you like kind of search and adjust for that. And for teams that have played at least 12 quad one and quad two games, which is going to be basically every power conference team, every team from the Mountain West and from the WCC as well, and from the American Conference, USC is number 26 overall in quad one, quad two games. So you can't just like ding a SC for quad one, quad two performance when you like actually within quad one, quad two, there were number 26. Now within quad one on its own, let's see. So we'll make that adjustment.
I bet it's going to be pretty similar.
And I will tell you in 1 second, it is, 25 in quad one games, which were 4 and 5 in. Like these are, it really defies explanation. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if anyone cares to do anything, but I will say this, when we're going to be getting to the point here, when the actual seeding comes out, where I think we still have another weekend, then we've got the conference tournament. So that a lot of the stuff is going to get kind of scrambled a bit, but you know, the way it's looking to me is Alabama is going to be a one seed. Kansas will be a one seed. Houston will be a one seed, and UCLA will be a one seed. That's my guess. That's where I'm at right now. And I don't think there's a lot of guessing outside of that. Those are, I know some people at Purdue, I think Purdue will not be one seed. I really don't think so. After those four and maybe the next four teams, which might include like Arizona and maybe Purdue or Texas, maybe Baylor, there is, and maybe Gonzaga too. There is so much parity here that almost every game is going to be like a 50-50 game. And, you know, I'm just looking at like a potential matchup here. A three versus, let's see, or like a six versus an 11, right? That'd be a common matchup, like TCU versus West Virginia. Okay. I mean, I know they played TCU. They're not going to play first round. These are both the Big 12, but those teams are of similar quality. I know TCU is better for sure. TCU versus Memphis. I don't know who's going to win that game on a neutral court. Maybe TCU is going to win. I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable making a
West Virginia, by the way, they're ahead of TCU and KenPom. So they might actually be favored in that game.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, just really crazy. So every single 6 versus 11 game is going to be, and the second round games are going to be complete coin tosses, I mean, maybe the one through four seeds or one through six seeds, maybe will be like clear favorites, but you know, you get a second round matchup of, for example, even Baylor versus Kentucky. I don't know who's going to win that. Baylor versus Arkansas. I don't know who's going to win that game. You know, I have no idea. So to the point where I'm like, it's like almost to me, you know, maybe 1-2 point favorite one way or the other. But these teams are so close, and I really hope SC does not. I mean, it's really going to be the draw you get as a result of all this. But SC has performed on the court, and I think that does need to be recognized here. So, and I guess the other thing I mentioned to you yesterday was like how many power conference teams have fewer than 8 losses? And we count them up, 11 out of whatever there are, 72 power conference teams, 11 have fewer than 8 losses. So, the parity is just insane.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think you in general want to avoid the 8-9 if you can. I wouldn't be shocked if we got an 8 or 9, just given kind of the trajectory. That seems like kind of about right. If we can get to the 6 line, that'd be huge. I mean, that's just a great line to be at, I think, in general, just because you get the 3 in the second round and the 2 and then the 1, right? But we'll see. I mean, that would require, I think, like, at least sweeping these next two and then maybe like beating Arizona again, which would be tough, but you know, you never know. Arizona has shown a lot of vulnerability this year as well. So, but yeah, like kind of like you said, I mean, I would rather not play Houston or Bama. You know, we won't play UCLA. I don't think they'll stick us in the same region. But like, they don't really scare me either. We saw Tennessee. We took them to overtime, right? UConn's up and down. Purdue's lot. They're losing a lot now. Kansas has the best resume, I think, in the country. But like, Tennessee was clearly superior when I saw those teams play. St. Mary's is 8 in KenPom, right? Like, they're not scaring anybody. So you know, it's totally wide open. I mean, Marquette's good, but you know, they're 69 defense, right? So no, I mean, I think it's totally wide open. I think like more than any other year, like seeding just doesn't really matter as much, and you just kind of have to get there and see what happens, right?
Yep. Absolutely. And speaking of that, speaking of seeding, so we have an interesting situation where I think there's a very, very likely scenario here where we're going to be playing Arizona each of the next 2 weeks. We're going to play them on Thursday. That's a game that's already scheduled. Then we have a follow-up. We have a game on Saturday against Arizona State to close out the regular season. We are a lock for 2 or 3 at this point in the Pac-12 standings. Right. If Arizona State were to win both, we were to lose both, I guess Arizona State could. So we could fall. I don't even know what the tiebreaker would be in that scenario, but Arizona State would have to beat UCLA here. So, I mean, it's possible, but most likely we're going to be a 2 or 3 seed, meaning we're going to play Arizona. And because they're probably not going to, my guess is they're not going to tie with Arizona State here. And so we'd have to get past whoever the 6 or 7 seed is. And that's starting to look like probably Washington State or Utah, probably, who would place in the first round. So if we were able to win that game, we'd play Arizona again if Arizona won. So we're going to have some big games coming up, and we're going to get to see this Arizona team, I have a feeling, up close and personal a couple times.
Here's one for you. If we sweep Arizona, so we beat them the first time and the second time, should we be seated ahead of them?
I mean, would that mean we also beat Arizona State?
I guess so in this hypothetical.
I mean, probably, but I mean, that's just,
case for it, right? I mean, it's kind of, the year is so wide open. I know that Arizona had that great non-conference, but they'd be up to, you know, if they lose to UCLA as well, that'd be 8 losses for them. We'd be at 8 losses. We'd, you know, have wins at that point, 2 against Arizona, 1 against UCLA.
Well, and look at that. And remember, now, under this hypothetical, which I'm just going to say, I do not think it's going to happen, they would have lost the last 3 games in the regular season and then also their second game of the tournament. So they would have lost 4 out of the last 5 games. So, right. And now that's very, actually, it's pretty similar to what happened to us last season. We closed out the year losing to both Arizona and UCLA, won 1 game in the tournament, then lost to UCLA, and then lost our first game of the tournament. So we lost 4 out of 5-2. So, you know, yes, that would probably push Arizona way down. I think that would cause a complete panic within the Arizona program. I do not see that happening. You know, look, I really, you know, they lost to Arizona State because a variety of factors, but that was a game they probably should have won, frankly. So I don't really see, they're a team that just plays down sometimes. And I don't see a complete collapse coming for Arizona State and for Arizona. And in fairness, they have won, you know, 9 of 11 games or something like that. So it's not like their season's, you know, on the brink of collapse.
No, I don't even look at it as a collapse if that happens. You know, I think just from their perspective, I mean, at USC, at UCLA, and then like USC on a neutral in that scenario, those are all Q1 games. So even if they do like manage to lose those 3, which I think is very unlikely, that's 3 Q1 losses. But I think what I was just trying to say is it just shows how crazy this year is, where you have USC as like a last 4 in, and then that's a very, plausible scenario. I don't think it's likely, but, losing to UCLA on the road and then, two games against USC, boom, 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 you go from a two to like, entering the conversation with USC on seeding. So it just, I think it just shows even from like the two line down to last four in, there's just not that much separation here.
Okay. So do you think, should we do the picks for this week or should we try to pod later in the week and do the picks in that?
We can do it. Let's go for it. So
okay, let's
how,
do
how,
it.
How are you feeling about these last two? Are you drinking the Kool-Aid? We're back with the full roster. Are you more looking at it as Arizona's a bad matchup? Let's get the whole Chase breakdown here.
Okay, so first off, I wish I had thought about this more going in. I did pick, so I had a good week at picks because I did pick Mountain Sweep. Arizona at home is going to be a tougher game than either of those two games we just played. I think significantly tougher game. That being said, let's see. Arizona shoots really well, both from three and from two in conference play. They draw a lot of fouls. Offensive rebounding is only moderately good, about the same as Colorado, actually. Of course, they do a lot more once they get the offensive rebound because they're first in the conference in effective field goal percentage. I do kind of feel like that pressure defense is not going to be nearly as effective at Galen as it was at McHale. And I do think our guys will be up for the game now. We really laid an egg last year at Galen against Arizona. I mean, it was maybe the worst game we played all season. We really laid an egg, but that was in many ways a better Arizona team. And we're kind of in a bad spot as a team at the time with Isaiah kind of hurt, and we're pretty healthy right now. I think this is a game we SC. I think it's going to be potentially a very, very close game that SC would be in a position to pull out, like very close, like almost going back to the that four overtime game that SC beat Arizona back. Wait, was that in 2017? I'm trying to remember.
Oh gosh, that's going way back. Yeah.
This Arizona team is pretty tough. I mean, but they have shown some vulnerabilities. On the other hand, they've won their big games, except for at Oregon. I kind of think SC might be able to pull out a really narrow game here. I think Arizona State, if we take care of business, I think we can beat Arizona State by like 8 points, 9 points. Those are my two picks.
Okay, so we got toss up to slightly lean SC and then SC by 8 over ASU. Sounds
correct.
Like.
Yeah.
Okay. I am going to pick Arizona. just the matchup. I can't get the Galen game out of my head last year. I know like that Arizona team was super talented, more than this year's team, but I just think like we're not quite like consistent enough to trust it. And look, I mean, I thought the Colorado game was like a down to the wire possession game and we just blew them out and looked really good. So, the case for SC is that when you look at Arizona on the road this year, it hasn't always been pretty, right? Utah beat them by 15. Now that was a healthy Utah, right? Like full roster, but yeah, they lost 81-66. Oregon beat them by 19, right? Now, like, we got run up there, too. So, Oregon at home is very tough when they're fully engaged and hitting on all cylinders. But, yeah, that happened. Stanford dropped 88 on them up in Palo Alto and beat them 88-79. So, you have, a track record here. I think just Arizona is going to be extremely motivated coming off of that ASU loss, and they haven't lost back-to-back games this year. So I would like lean ever so slightly to Arizona, but if I think our home court environment's great and we're absolutely capable of pulling it off too. So I'll go Arizona by like three, And then I think against ASU, they're going to be playing with their hair on fire, with their tournament life's on the line. I think we're just better than them, and I don't think they can hit enough threes like they did against Arizona against us. In this one, they just haven't done it consistently enough for me to go with them. So I think I'll take us by about 10 in that one.
Okay. Yeah. I think we kind of see it similar ways, although I think maybe SC pulls it out against Arizona. It's gonna be, we have not played very good defense against any Tommy Lloyd team so far. I know the best we did, right, was the first game in McHale last year, where we held, it was 72-63, and that was the game where we just kind of fell apart at the end of the game. And we held them to 72 points. But then since then, it's, we've struggled. And the game at Galen last year, gosh, when they scored the 91 points, I mean, they were just passing the ball all over the place, and we really couldn't do anything about it. I'm hoping we're going to see a much livelier game from guys like Boogie, who didn't do a ton in that game. And then we'll just, Kobe having a big game is my hope. So we were flummoxed by them when we played them last year at Galen. We, none of the guys you need to have big games had them. I mean, Joshua Morgan had like maybe the best game for us, and he only played, like 12 minutes. One of the things, I'll be curious to see is what are we able to do with Balo, because he'd started the season so strong. And he hasn't really put the production up in recent games that we saw earlier in the season. I think the rebounding for the most part has been pretty good, but he's had some fall off in rebounding too. So I know Warren Washington did kind of a little bit of a number on him. With our bigs, I'm hoping there's enough there that we can kind of, if we can disrupt Balo, I think that kind of goes a long way to disrupting a lot of what they do. And you just got to cover, the threes. You can't let Ramey hit wide open or take wide open threes. You can't let Creason take wide open threes. You just got to guard that line, And I think it's doable, but yeah, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, discipline will be huge in this one. I think we have to win the turnover battle, and lots of teams do win the turnover battle against Arizona. They're kind of a reckless team just because they push the pace so fast in transition. And Ramey is a huge guy for them, right? Like that, there's a massive difference if he's going like 4 for 8 from three as opposed to 2 for 8 from three, right? That's 6 points right there, and we'll see if he hits some. I mean, if you want to look at like the bright side too, right? Like they were super on against us. That was a almost perfect game by them. They shot really well. They hit half their threes, made 12. We only went 4 for 17 in that one, and yet like it was only a 15-point game, and like maybe they could have run it up more if they really put the clamps down in the second half. But I don't know if they're like capable of putting the clamps down on defense. They had a stretch there, in the middle of the year after that Oregon loss where they looked really good defensively, kind of against us in that first half and against UCLA as well. But it's kind of gotten back away from them. So we'll see. Like Tubelis is a big part of the problem. Like Lloyd pulling him at the end of that game against ASU for defensive reasons, I thought was really something. And hopefully there's some things that we can look at on film and take advantage of, because we didn't really hunt him, I think, in that last game the way like maybe we could have too.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who that would be. If that's, would that be Trey White? Would that be Drew? I'm not sure exactly. You just got to be careful about the way you do it. I could actually see Trey being, if Trey can get him to come out and try to guard him a little bit on the outside, that could be interesting. But yeah, we'll just have to see. Okay, anything else before we get out of here?
That's all I got. Just a crazy week of basketball, and definitely glad we came out with those 2 wins.
Yep, absolutely. And we, oh, by the way, we've secured a first round bye the Pac-12 tournament. So we will not be playing on that Wednesday, the 8th, I think, of March. We'll start on the Thursday. So it's good to know. And everyone make it to Galen on Thursday if you can. Huge game.
Yes.
So fight on.
Yep. Right on. Thank you.